And then when they wouldn't let us in, my dad, he pushed the security guard. Yeah, and he said, you're stupid.
What? Yeah, right, Jackson. Your dad wouldn't push a security guard.
Yeah, huh? My dad is the strongest dad in the world. He pushes who he wants.
Yeah, well, my dad could beat up your dad.
Nuh-uh.
Uh-huh.
No.
Yeah, huh?
No, he can't.
Yes.
No.
Hello, classmates. You seem to be having a lively debate this morning.
Yeah, well, Jackson said his dad could beat up my dad, but I didn't know my dad could beat up his dad. Uh-huh.
I see. I believe my father can incapacitate both of your fathers. Either individually or at the same time. How many weapons will our fathers be permitted to use?
What?
Weapons?
Ah, and to hand combat, then. My father will likely employ his mastery of Aikido or Tai Chi Chuan. Which martial arts do your fathers ascribe to?
I don't think my dad...
On second thought, don't tell me. It's more enjoyable for my father to find out in the moment. Will this fight take place in a formal setting, or will they just have 48 hours to complete the objective?
I don't know. My dad has to work a lot.
Yeah.
As does mine. He spent the last 6 months working on Operation Flying Dragon.
Whoa, what's that?
It's the reason you're speaking English today.
My dad works at Comcast.
I see. Then my father will really enjoy this.
And like, my dad, he doesn't know all that karate stuff.
Then he will die quickly.
What?
Are there any ground rules you'd like to lay out, such as no biting, kicking, or erasing all traces of your father's existence?
Yeah, let's say that's not a possible.
Yeah.
Very well. I'm assuming psychological tactics are still fair game. How opposed are you to biological weapons? I'm just kidding. Uh-huh. My father's not a monster. Yeah. What about waterboarding?
What?
I don't think my dad wants to fight your dad.
Of course he doesn't. But sometimes our fathers must do things they wish they didn't have to. See things they wish they could unsee. This world is a dark place, and our fathers must work in the darkness in order to protect what little light there is. So should we give our fathers the go sign?
No,
okay. No. Your dad could beat up my dad.
Yeah.
Very well. Good day, classmates.
Bye.
Hello, Father. I gathered the intel you asked for.
My dad works at Comcast.
All right, we are continuing our Elephant in the Church series, and we are talking about conflict. Conflict is something that we start learning as early as the schoolyard. In kindergarten, first grade, we're already trying to start fights for other people to have to fight. Because at that age, we want to see our dads fight because they're the strongest people we possibly know. And the best way to figure out who the strongest is to fight about it. See, we learn conflict from a very early age. And with that in mind, I'm actually just going to skip the first 2 points of review this week because we're going to talk all about conflict. I don't need to give you the disclaimer about how it's okay to disagree and we can work this out because we're about to talk about that for like 30 minutes. So I just wanted to review the things we've talked about so far in this series. First, the idea that all tribes, nations, and tongues will one day come together to worship God, as we looked at ethnicity and the fact that God doesn't use things like skin color or culture to determine our value. We have value independent of that. The skin color and culture and things like that is just things that God used to paint the beautiful tapestry of humanity that exists on this planet. We talked about our finances and the fact that when it comes to our finances, we need to have a values-based budget, a way of spending our money and using the resources God has given us in ways that reflect our Christian values. We talked about the fact that God created marital relations and that relationship, and he declared it to be good. And we talked about the fact that so often we get that wrong as we focus on all the negative sides of that instead of the good thing that God designed it to be. And we talked about the reason for that being that sin has broken our approach to marital relations. But that God has put this church, the church, in place to start redeeming some of that back, to start fixing some of the brokenness that exists around that issue. And the fact that we need to be regularly communicating these things. I'm realizing in this moment that I used an old slide here, so it doesn't have the last 2 weeks where we talked about politics last week and mental illness the week before. But these were all things that we've discussed that the church tends to view as taboos, things that don't regularly get discussed in the church setting, and that we need to fix that. We need to start communicating on a more regular basis. Our theme verse out of Ephesians 5, verses 12 through 14, says it's shameful to even speak of the things they do in secret. But when anything is exposed to the light, it becomes visible. For anything that becomes visible is light. And we've been talking about this idea that in the church, there really should be nothing that is off limits. There should be nothing that is taboo, that we should be able to openly communicate with each other about even the hard things in life. And with that in mind, let's talk about one that we've probably experienced more than any other thing on this list, the idea of conflict. So where does conflict come from? Well, first, just talking about the one that a lot of us like to hold on to is this place of genuine malice, this place of genuine desire to do harm or to see hurt befall another person. This is a source of conflict. It does exist in the world. There are evil people who desire to see other people hurt. And with that in mind, that can create conflict. But the reality is, this is not the most common one. And in our heart of hearts, we know that this is not most often the source of conflict. When this does become a source of conflict, we have actually what we saw last week in Romans 13, the fact that God has instituted things like government and things like authority to step in and deal with people who are behaving in this manner. We have police officers who come to fix the problem when someone is genuinely out there causing harm to other people for the sake of causing harm. We have people to come alongside and help assist with mental health where this is an issue. But for most of us, when we are dealing with conflict in our lives, if we are genuinely honest with ourselves and we are introspective, we know that the person or the people that we are in conflict with are not actually out there to hurt us from a sense of just general malice. Usually it falls into one of these other categories, something like a misunderstanding or more commonly a miscommunication. See, one of the main sources of conflict is when one person says something and the other person hears something different. It's miscommunication in the sense that communication is one of these weird phenomenon where two things can be true at the same time. This person can say something that is 100% true, and person number two can hear something that's 100% false. Same words said, two different things communicated. It is a weird phenomenon that exists in communication that I can say one thing and you can hear something entirely different. I have had this happen to me a couple different times in a couple different ways. I seem to have lost the PowerPoint, but they'll figure that out because they're awesome like that. But where I will preach a sermon, right? And I go into it with a ton of preparation, knowing what I want to say, how I want to say it, and I will spend an entire morning talking about conflict. And then at the end of the sermon, someone will come up to me and go, "Hey, Pastor Kyle, that was really great. I really, really enjoyed the way that you talked about loving my neighbor as myself this morning." I'm like, "That, I didn't say that once. Like, not a single time in my sermon did I say that. But I can say it, and something entirely different can be heard." That is a normal, recurring problem. But it can also happen one-on-one, too. And many of you have heard me tell this story in the past, but at one of my previous churches, I had a woman who sat in the back on the right-hand side, well, my right, your left side, right on the aisle. She loved that seat. I mean, it was a Baptist church, so everybody basically had their assigned seats, but for her in particular, this seat mattered, and she made it known to me very, very early on, not only that the seat mattered, but why, because she didn't have your typical Baptist reason for loving this seat. She loved this seat because her husband had passed away, and she knew that when she sat in this seat, her dead husband would speak to her, and she made that very clear, that she didn't mean, like, I just feel closer to him, like I have a good memories of him. She meant she was, when she sat in this seat, her dead husband spoke to her. And I said, okay. Well, time went on, and it came to a point where we needed to change the seating in the auditorium. The seating in the auditorium was not conducive to what we were trying to accomplish. So we were going to move some seats around, but I knew. See, I've been pastoring long enough at that point that I knew I needed to be very, very careful moving that seat. So I went to her as we were making the plan, and I sat down with her and I said, "Ma'am, I know this seat's important to you. I want to do everything in my power to protect this seat because I know it's important. But here's what I need to know. Is it the pew? Is it the location? Or is it both? Because if it's the pew, we'll just move that pew up front and you can still have your pew. It'll be in a different location. Everything will be great. If it's the location, we can get rid of the pew and put a chair in that same location and make sure it's pretty. But if it's both, we'll make sure that this pew stays in this location and everybody will be happy." I was like, I want to do whatever it takes to protect your seat. 2 weeks later, I hadn't seen her in about 2 weeks, and another person in the church came up to me and said, "So do you know why she's not here?" I said, "I have no idea." So because she said, "You told her she couldn't sit in her seat anymore." And I went, "What?" That's the exact opposite of what I said. Like, I could not have said more the opposite thing of what just got related back. It's a miscommunication. I said one thing. She heard something different. And there are all kinds of reasons why that could happen. Either we're assuming things in advance, we expect to hear something, so that's what we get. There are countless reasons why, but it is a miscommunication, which means both parties can come into it with a pure, gentle, loving heart and still end up in conflict. Another one is incorrect or sometimes correct assumptions. When we see someone dress a certain way, acting a certain way, talking a certain way, we can make assumptions about that person that may or may not be true. And based on those assumptions, we can end up in conflict without any good reason why. For example, if someone came into our church right now and they were dressed in a Boston Red Sox uniform, I can instantly make some assumptions, right? And some of them might be correct. They like baseball, right? If you're wearing a baseball uniform, chances are you enjoy baseball. Or because it's a Boston Red Sox uniform, I can assume they're a terrible human being, right? See, sometimes we make correct assumptions, sometimes we make incorrect assumptions, and when we make some incorrect assumptions, we can end up in conflict for no good reason. Because the reality is they might be the one Boston Red Sox fan on the planet who is actually a decent human being. I don't know that until I go and have a conversation and clarify some communication. We can make incorrect assumptions, or sometimes even correct ones, because cultural differences can also be something that come in and cause conflict. Probably the most famous one of these is the idea that there are cultures that to show the bottom of your foot is to deal an offense. No one in this room has probably ever thought when putting their foot up on their knee that they could be basically giving somebody the middle finger by showing the bottom of their foot. It would never even occur to you, and you could end up in conflict just because of a cultural difference between you and someone else. From no point of malice, with pure, loving intent in your heart, you can still end up in conflict. And when this happens, we have some myths that we tend to believe about conflict. Some things that we have learned either through our culture or through our churches growing up that sometimes they just don't help us when trying to deal with conflict. The first of these is that conflict is bad. See, as we talk about conflict, oftentimes we end up stressed out because we come into it with this foundational understanding that if we're in conflict, something bad has happened. And the reality is that conflict, at its core, is a tool. Conflict is when two things are out of line, that the process of conflict and conflict resolution is designed to bring things back into alignment. So conflict in and of itself is not a bad thing. It's actually a natural thing. It will happen from time to time, right? Show of hands, who has ever been in conflict? All of us. Right? Because this is something that happens naturally. We don't have to go pursuing conflict. If you have lived for any length of time, or if you have a sibling, you will eventually be in conflict sooner than later. If I missed you and you didn't put your hand up and you've never been in conflict, come talk to me after. I'll fight with you and we'll get you. You'll be a part of everybody. We'll get it all figured out. But conflict, we assume it's a bad thing, but it's not. It is something that happens naturally to help bring us back into alignment with one another. If someone sins against me, I have the right to be angry. See, this is a myth that many of us believe to our core. It's also one that I regularly forget is not true. Because we come into this with the mentality that if someone has sinned against me, I have the right to be angry with them. And we said this during our Romans series. I believe we said it again during our Philippians series. But the reality is, we as human beings, the moment we sinned against God, the moment we rebelled against God, it means that the only right we had from that moment till now is to burn for eternity in hell. That is the only thing we have ever earned for ourselves that we are owed, that we can expect. Because God is the one who sets the standard, and because God is the only one who has ever upheld the standard, God is the only one who ever has the right to be angry that his standard that he has kept perfectly has been violated. He is the only one who has ever had the right to be angry that he was sinned against. And yet, when we sinned against him, when we rebelled against him, and when he had the right to be angry with us and just haul up and give us all the judgment we deserved, in that moment, Romans 5:8 tells us that he instead showed us his love by sending his son to die on our behalf. When he had every right, and as he is the only one who has ever had the right to be angry, what he did instead was send his son to be the sacrifice so that he and you can have a relationship, so that he can make things right between you and him. That is how he responded to sin. And if he is the one who had the right to be angry, he is the only one who has kept his standard perfectly, and it's his standard in the beginning, does not exercise his right to be angry, and instead gives us forgiveness and mercy and grace beyond mercy, how do I then as an individual have the right to say, in spite of that, I'm still going to be angry. I'm going to choose to harbor my anger. On the other side of that same coin, there's this myth that's perpetuated that when I get angry, because it does happen, the only godly thing to do to avoid conflict is to just push that down as far and as deep as I can to make sure that no one ever sees it. I hide it. I put it back in the closet in the darkness where it doesn't belong, and I just make sure that no one on the outside can see how angry I am on the inside, and that fixes everything, and we can all put on the smile and go about our business. That is equally a lie. Not only do I not have the right to maintain my anger and to harbor my anger, but I also don't, I shouldn't hold it in and keep it down. So what are we supposed to do with anger? Well, anger, at its core, is designed to be a warning. When you end up in interpersonal conflict with somebody, when you end up in a situation where you feel anger, what that's designed to be as an emotion, as a part of how God wired us and made us, is a warning. It's a smoke detector, right? So I've had the opportunity to go into a few fires in my life. I was a firefighter for a while. If you've ever either had a house fire or had the opportunity to go into to a place where there is a large amount of smoke, you'll know that smoke alarms exist because they make themselves known. They make a lot of noise. They scream and chirp. And when you go in, their purpose is to tell you, hey, there's a fire in the house. That is the entirety of their focus. That is all they are designed to do, is to say, hey, there's a fire in the house. As a firefighter, when I went in and I heard that, I didn't think to myself, that is a great tool, and reach up and take it off the ceiling and throw it at the fire. because it would be utterly useless to try to fight a fire with a smoke detector. And yet so often this is how we approach conflict, is to say, well, no, but Pastor Kyle, anger is the source of my motivation, and it's the thing that I will use to fix the problem that it's pointing out. But that is as useful to use your anger to fight the fire as it is to pull the smoke detector off the ceiling and throw it at a fire. Actually, it's worse than that. Because once anger has done its job to say, hey, wake up, there's a problem, there's something you need to address, there's something you need to work on, hey, open your eyes, there's a fire in the house. Once it's done that, it doesn't just go to being useless. It goes to being an active detriment. Harbored anger is poison that will slowly kill you from the inside out. In our example, it's like if every smoke detector on the planet was made out of a hand grenade, and you went in and you were like, hey, the smoke alarm's going off, there's a fire there. It did its job, but now you're gonna pull it off the ceiling and throw it in the fire. It's not just going to do nothing, it's going to make your situation significantly worse to try to use it to fight the fire. It's the same way in our conflict. If we use our anger in any way more than to alert us to a problem, and rather try to fix interpersonal conflict with anger, the only thing it's going to do is make it worse. So when anger alerts us to a problem, we address it. We say, okay, what is the problem it's trying to alert me to? And then we need to let it go. So if we're not going to use anger, how do we address, how do we fix interpersonal conflict? Well, I want to give you 7 principles for resolving conflict. I also want to tell you on the front end, these are not original to me. The things I'm going to say about them are, but the 7 principles I took from a blog that I follow that I thought he really nailed these 7 principles very well. And the first one is this: take the initiative. The first step of resolving conflict is to take initiative. See, so often, when we're talking about conflict, what we like to say is, well, I'll deal with that when they come and have the conversation with me. When they're ready to reconcile, I'm willing to reconcile. So when they come and talk to me, then I'll be ready. But look what Scripture says. It says, so if you're offering your gift at the altar, and you remember there that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother, then come and offer your gift. So this is Jesus speaking here in the book of Matthew. And here's what he's saying. If you find yourself trying to worship God, in obedience, doing the thing God has called you to do, coming before him to worship, and it comes to your mind that you have a brother or sister who has something against you, stop what you're doing. Don't wait. Go make it right. Then and there. What he's actually saying here is that this interpersonal relationship with your brother or sister in Christ is more important than worshiping God. You need to go get that right first, then come and worship God. You need to go get that right first, then come to church. Fix your relationship, then go to your small group. Whatever it is that you're doing, go immediately and make things right. So here's what I'm saying to you. I don't really leave application to the end, but this one I'm going to handle right here. If you are here this morning, and in your mind you know that someone has something against you, or in your mind you know that your relationship with somebody isn't right, get up and go deal with it. Do not wait for the end of the sermon. Do not wait for my next point. Do not wait. If you need someone to go with you, I did not prep him for this. Pat would be happy to go with you. I did not prep her with this. Audrey would be happy to go with you. But go make it right now. Don't wait. Take the initiative. 2, confess your part. When it comes to interpersonal conflict, It always takes two to tango. And it might be that the person who you have a problem with is 99.9% in the wrong. It is their fault. They totally messed it up. But you still have 0.1. And whether or not they ever confess their 99%, whether or not they ever come and ask your forgiveness for that 99%, whether or not they ever do what God has called them to do, is of no impact on you. You need to do what God has called you to do, which is to confess your part, to ask forgiveness for your part, and to try to reconcile. It says, Matthew 7:3-5, why then do you see the speck that is in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that's in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye when there's a log in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. One of the things I find interesting in how we look at this, and in the context this mostly works, but it's this idea that so often when we talk about it, we talk about the fact that the analogy here is because you have something so big in your eyes, you shouldn't help your brother with the little thing that's in his eye. But here's what I would suggest. Even if this was reversed, even if you were the one with the speck in your eye and your brother was the one with the log in his eye, you still want to get the speck out of your eye before you go performing surgery on somebody else's eye. I don't care that his thing is bigger. You've still got something in your eye. If your surgeon walked in to do surgery on you and he was like this, I'm not sure, I got a speck in my eye today, but it's just a little speck, so I'll be fine. I'll just do this all one-eyed. Yeah, this'll work. No, you're not okay with that. Fix it. Deal with it so that you can be a benefit and a help to the brothers and sisters around you. Whether yours is the 99 or yours is the one, deal with your stuff. Third, listen. We are really, really bad at this. When it comes to listening to one another, most of us don't like to stop talking long enough to hear the person we're talking to. We hear the words, but only just enough to form our argument and response. Only just enough to hear if they say the buzzword that I need so I can jump up and down on it so I can prove them wrong and tell them how I'm right. Like, we are really, really bad at listening to somebody and actually being able to understand their side of an argument and their point of view. See, the book of James says, know this, my beloved brothers. Let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger. James is saying, look, slow down. Open your ears. Listen to the person you are talking to because they are a valued child of God and they deserve your attention. Slow down. Most of the time, if we could hear what the other person is thinking, if we could hear what the other person was feeling, if we could articulate back to them their point of view, it would solve so many problems, which is actually why the next one is consider their perspective. As you're listening, don't just listen to form your next point. Listen so that you can thoughtfully and considerately consider their perspective, their point of view on the topic. Because as we said before, it is very rare that we are in conflict because someone has genuine malice against us. Usually, it falls into one of the other categories, like miscommunication, which means if we stopped and listened and considered their point of view, what we would oftentimes find is that they hold their point of view for a reason. They have actually thought about it. They have formulated their opinion on the matter, and there is a reason why. And if we take the time to listen and consider it, we could learn something. Bare minimum, we would better understand why it's important to them. And as we care about them, we will care about the things that are important to them. We can still disagree on that. We can still say, I understand that it's important to you. I love you, and I respect the fact that that's important to you. And I can still think you're wrong. But it will be entirely different than when I come in at it with the mentality of, you're an idiot, you're really an idiot, and you're wrong. You're going to approach it very differently depending on how you lead up to that point. Yeah, you'll probably get punched, right? But if we take the time to listen and consider their perspective, here's how you'll know that you're there, that you have listened and considered their perspective. If you can argue for it. Again, you don't have to agree with something to argue for it. But you can understand their perspective to the point that you could make their case for them. Sometimes you can actually get to the point where you could make their case better than them. Because you've listened to them, you've understood why it's important, and you've considered their point of view. Philippians 2:4 says, let each of you look not only to their own interests, but also to the interests of others. Listen to the things that are important to your brothers and sisters and act accordingly. And we need to be able to marry truth and grace. After hearing them, after considering a person's point of view to the point that I can argue it for them, understanding why it's important to them, and understanding that they're not idiots, they're just people who think differently than I do, it might still come down to an issue of truth. They might actually be wrong. They might actually still believe that the sun goes around the earth instead of the other way around. I don't know, but they could be actually 100% wrong. And in that case, we are going to need to speak truth into that situation. What matters is how. How are we going to speak truth into that? Are we going to speak truth like, hey, dum-dum, you're wrong. Look at this textbook. It answers all your questions. And then throw the textbook at their head. Or are we going to graciously and lovingly share with them, hey, I think you missed a point here. And I appreciate all the effort you have put into formulating your worldview, but with one small tweak here, you'll see that it comes out very differently. And with grace, show them the truth. See, Ephesians 4:15 says, rather, speaking the truth in love is how we're going to grow up into every way, into him who is the head, into Christ. It's not just speaking truth. If it was just speaking truth, it would actually be easier. We are called to speak the truth in love, as if we genuinely care about the person, which again, we genuinely care about the person because God genuinely cares about the person. So we're called to do that too, to speak the truth, but to do so in love, in grace. 6, fix the problem, not the blame. Most of us really like to play the blame game, but that's not the point of conflict. The point of conflict is to get us to the point where we are fighting the fire, not figuring out who said it. So Colossians 3:8 says, but now you must put them all away, anger, wrath, malice, slander, obscene talk from your mouth. What it's saying is, look at these interpersonal things that we do when we get angry. We throw anger at it, we throw wrath at it, we throw malice at it, we talk badly about people and slander them and cut them down and obscene talk. And what Paul's saying to the Colossian church is, knock that off. Don't attack each other. Work together to fix the problem that you're facing. Because ultimately we want to put reconciliation as a higher priority than resolution. We want to put reconciliation as a higher priority than resolution. And any of you who are married know what I'm talking about. Because you stood in front of each other at some point in life and said, for better or for worse, good or bad, I am going to stay true to you till death do us part. Which means even when things are terrible, I am committing to, even if they don't get resolved, I am going to put the emphasis on our relationship first. And I'm going to focus on reconciling our relationship, even if that thing that's broken never gets fixed. Now, we want to work on both. This is not one or the other. But what God is calling us to do, and what we have committed to do in marriages, and I believe in friendships as well, is that we need to prioritize reconciliation over even finding a resolution to the problem. Matthew 5:9 says this, blessed are the peacemakers, for they're the ones who are going to be called the sons of God. Those are the people who are going to be called the children of God, the one who seek to make peace. before even fixing the problem. There is no such thing in conflict resolution as a silver bullet. But I can tell you this. If you practice these seven principles around your conflict resolution, you will have three legs up on the next person. Because these are God-given principles that are designed to help us resolve conflict and fix the problems that we have with each other. If you want to take a picture, great. Otherwise, it will be on our YouTube channel, probably like 5 minutes after this is over. But it brings us to the so what. What is the application here? Well, first, it's this. Families, fight. Everyone with a sibling, put an arm in the air. All right, you got a sibling, brother, sister, something. Oh, keep them up. I want you to keep your hand in the air if you've never fought with your sibling. You've never fought with your sibling. Emily? bad lie when your sibling's in the room. Families, fight. It happens. But when families fight, families fight for each other. They forgive. When families fight, because you're family, family comes first. And the fact that you're family should supersede whatever it is that you're fighting about. Tragically, that doesn't always happen. But most of the time, a lot of the time, we have learned as family, especially if you have siblings, how to hold conflict, to be upset, and not negate the reality of the fact that we're still family. We can learn to hold conflict and still behave well at Thanksgiving dinner. We can still be family. And ultimately come to a point where we can work through that and we forgive. Unfortunately, we don't always do this as a church family. In today's culture, it has become all too common for conflict to arise in a church body. And I have a problem with somebody else in the church. And when that happens, those two parties come together, and what usually happens is one party says, I'm digging in my heels. And the other party says, all right, there's another family over here. I'm just going to join the Smith family, and they leave. Friends, that's not what we're called to do. Are there good and right times that a person should change church? Absolutely. But the reality is we are called to be family. And what that means is at times there's going to be conflict. We're going to fight. We're going to disagree on things, such as a taboo topic series. But what we are called to do as a family is to come together, to work through that, to have conversation, to get help if we need to go to mom and dad if we need to, and get the help we need because we are siblings. And we need to work through it so we can come to a point where we forgive each other. Because families put family first. When it comes to our interpersonal conflicts, when it comes to the things that we don't see eye to eye on, maybe you didn't like my politics sermon. Okay. I care more about remaining in your life as part of your Christian family than I do what you thought about my sermon. You might not like the music we sing. You might not like the color of the carpet. You might not like the fact that we still have stained glass. I don't know how you cannot like the elephant. The elephant's awesome. Like, everybody agrees that the elephant's awesome. But you may have things that you don't like. That's okay. What I'm calling you to do is put the family first and say it is so important to me that we function as a family that we are going to deal with that without putting this on the chopping block. We're going to work through this and we're going to get to a place of forgiveness because that's what God is calling us to do while we work together as a family. Let's pray. God, I thank you that you have gifted us such a wonderful family. God, just people we can laugh with, people that we can have a good time with, and there has been so much of that recently. It has been so, so enjoyable. Father, I thank you for the way that you are regularly bringing new members into this family.
God, I pray that we would value that, that we would treasure that, and we would protect that. Because, God, we know that it is only a matter of time before conflict comes. We live in a broken world. But, God, this thing that you have established, this church, is so valuable. Let us prioritize that to the point that we will put the work in to resolve conflict in a godly way, following the biblical principles that you've laid out as we strive to restore relationship, not break it off. Well, thank you for it in your son's name. Amen.